From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
At age 84, the Dalai Lama released his 125th book. Artist Carmen Herrera, at age, get this, 104, is still exhibiting new works in New York City in a career that didn't begin until she was 81. Now, millions of people are experiencing increased creativity and purpose in their lives through their 80s, 90s, and beyond. So why do some people age better than others? We're joined now by award-winning neuroscientist Daniel Levitin. He's the best-selling author of This Is Your Brain on Music and The Organized Mind. And he explores the new science of aging in a new book called Successful Aging, exploring the power and potential of our lives. Daniel Levitin, welcome to The Mountain Life. Great to have you back.
It's great to be back and to be back on the hometown station of my family, Sherry Levitin and Lee Gerstein of Park City.
Yes, yes. So glad that you're back with us and that you've come out with this kind of revolutionary book, Successful Aging, and the way you look at aging sort of blows up our, I guess, current thinking about how as you age, you become less open-minded, more restricted in your activity and your circle of friends and all that. And you're saying, forget all that. It's a time of life that we need to take all of this experience we've amassed and become more and more open.
Yes, there's a societal narrative that of ageism, really, that old age is a time of decline, decay, uselessness, and the research just doesn't bear that out. Inspiring stories like the ones you told, the Dalai Lama, Carmen Herrera, Jane Goodall, age 89, Judy Collins, age 80, still rearranging and reimagining her music. If you have the right mindset and you are able to push back against the tendency to slow down and be set in your ways, the benefits are enormous. Retirement typically spells a quick downturn. If you can keep going, whether you stay in your job or retire from that and retire to something else, we find that people can easily, I mean, unless some calamity or illness overtakes them, can easily go into their 80s or 90s and beyond very happily and productively.
Daniel, we were talking in the green room, Pete and I, a bit ago about people that we know and love in our families who are older. And I'll just give you an example of my mom. You know, somewhere she read that if she does jigsaw puzzles, it'll keep her mind active. And I think that's where she may kind of limit herself, because certainly in many other arenas that she could be opening her mind and learning about technology, for example, she just turns it all off and says, no, that's not for me. That's up to you young people to learn. What's going to happen to her as a result of that kind of thinking?
Well, I mean, I don't feel qualified to weigh in on your mom in particular.
Smart.
People, you know, people differ. This is part of the interesting story. For most people, doing crossword puzzles or jigsaw puzzles or Sudoku is amusing, but it doesn't really enhance brain health and doesn't contribute to staying young of mind. There are exceptions, and your mom may be one of them. The most notable exception I encountered was Sonny Rollins, one of the greatest living saxophone players, greatest living jazz musicians, who's 89, and he had to stop playing because he had a lung disease. He spends most of his time immersing himself in Zen Buddhist teachings. He meditates, he reads, he finds a very active intellectual engagement in that. He's never been particularly social. In fact, he moved out of New York City so that people wouldn't just drop by and ring the bell and interrupt him. This is working for him. He's at one end of an extreme. But for most of us, doing jigsaw puzzles, as I say, can be amusing. If you're really more interested in what you can do to tilt the balance in your favor, that you will find life meaningful and be happy. It involves getting out and doing things with other people and making some contribution to the world, to being doing something that helps other people.
Thank you. I want to be the old curmudgeon that responds, those are outliers. If I'm sitting drinking my coffee and doing my daily routine of visiting the coffee shop or whatnot. How would you respond to that criticism that these are just outlier stories that you're giving us?
Here. So there are nuances here. There was a story about some older adult Italians who would get together at a coffee shop for hours a day and play briscola, Italian card game. They didn't want anyone telling them they shouldn't be playing cards. But if you unpack that, that's very different than sitting home alone at the jigsaw table or going out for a coffee and just finding a corner with your newspaper. Yeah, those things are pleasurable. We like the routine. We like some solitary time. But what those briscola players are doing is interacting with each other. They're having conversations. They're talking about the news, about their families. What the three of us are doing right now, having a conversation, is about the most complex thing we know of for the human brain. More complicated than brain surgery, rocket science. It requires all of your faculties to stay engaged in human contact. Although you may not want to do that 24/7, having a bit of it is important.
So,
even for a curmudgeon.
Thank you. What strategies or what services would you suggest for someone that's receiving something like Meals on Wheels or homebound elders? What suggestions would you have?
Well, this is, of course, tricky if mobility is the problem, if you can't actually get out. Most communities have religious organizations and community organizations that are not necessarily tied to a religion or a church or synagogue. Ways of helping shut-ins, older adults who are less mobile. And I would say avail yourself of those services. Figure out what they are. And if there isn't anything formal, just start asking around. Local newspaper, local radio station. Ask your neighbors. And there's been a growing movement in the United States to address this. There are programs where college students will come and meet with older adults who are less mobile, or even other older adults. You got two 80-year-olds, one's in a wheelchair or in bed, can't leave the house, the other 80-year-old is mobile. The one who's mobile comes and spends a few hours a week with the one who isn't, even if they're strangers. That kind of contact is important, not just for mental health, but for the very practical reason that lonely adults will often, due to loneliness and against their better judgment, get into conversations with any salesperson who comes by or calls on the phone and inadvertently get scammed.
That is the saddest thing. It really is. You talk a lot about, in the introduction, we talked about Carmen Herrera, who's 104, and the Dalai Lama. What about those who are aging, in their mid-40s, when you start to think of, oh gosh, my knees are a little more sore than they ought to be. Must be because I'm aging. One of the things you talk about is don't view yourself as aging. Easier said than done, I'm certain. But can you talk about that aspect?
Well, a lot of it is mindset. You can change your personality. You can change your outlook. All the world's major religions are based on this idea that you can change. Depending on the religion, they talk about fighting off the devil or fighting off certain tendencies and temptations. But one of the temptations is to give in to feeling old. Clint Eastwood, age 89, just released a new movie. He says, when you ask, why is it that you are so engaged and active at age 89, how do you do it? He says, I don't let the old man in.
That's so great. If you're just joining
us, he's not letting the old man in. I don't know how he gets to the point where he can do that other than force of will. Maybe he went in therapy. Maybe he meditates. Maybe he's getting, he just has good genes. But any of us can achieve that attitude. And, therapy works. It works at any age.
Right. Our guest is Daniel Levitin. His new book is Successful Aging. A neuroscientist explores the power and potential of our lives. Because you're familiar with Park City, Daniel, I'll talk about the army of volunteers or part-time workers who are retirees here during the ski season, especially if you go up to Deer Valley. You see just hordes of people having such a great time who are in retirement age, who get here and who say, wow, I'm retired. Now I'm really bored. And they have such a great time. So that creating a social network, being involved, having hobbies and volunteerism, also very important.
Yeah, and the important part of this, it's not just about you. It's not just about you being entertained and busy and engaged. It's about being a valued member, feeling valuable. In most jobs, no matter what you do, you are valued for filling a job. Somebody's paying you, they value you. We had a custodian in my department at McGill, which is kind of the lowest job in a university, sweeping the floors. He was a Portuguese immigrant, and he took great pride in sweeping the floors because he was sweeping the floors of a laboratory that was looking for a cure for cancer. He felt very valued. He did not want to retire. That feeling of being valued is something that we need to look for in some cases. And that, as you say, that's where volunteerism kicks in. Just to come back to this idea that you can change yourself at any age, it's never too late to start. Therapy is not the only way. Meditation, yoga, lots of different ways to get your mindset changed and to approach being the person you want to be.
Is this one of the reasons why, towards the end of the book, you quote and you say, when I rest, I rust? Is this the correlation that, you need that value?
Yeah, and you need a certain amount of stress in your life. Stress is what motivates us to do things. If you had some ailment and you weren't stressed out about it, you might not go to the doctor, and that might be a time when you need to see the doctor. Like most things in life, things need to be in balance. There needs to be moderation. Zero stress is bad, too much stress is bad, but there is a Goldilocks level of stress that's just right, and you get that from striving and from doing things that allow you to feel a valuable part of a larger organization or purpose.
And in contrast to that, many people come to Park City simply just to remove themselves from that humdrum of the work world. We've had a lot of people leave the East Coast, leave the business world, and they come here to Park City to create that moderation in their lifestyle. Would you suggest that people focus on retirement, or would you say there's a lifelong plan? What would you say? I know a lot of people talk to me about, how's your 401k looking? How's your retirement plan? You'll stop working. That's when you'll really have fun. And I think many here in Park City are wanting to travel, do stuff with their kids. Is that a healthy mindset? How would you address that?
It really depends on the individual. There's no one answer that applies to everybody. We differ from one another in thousands of different ways. But on average, statistically, the advice is don't retire, ever, because retirement in most people leads to a very rapid decline. Unless you make an extra special effort, when you retire, your social circles shrink. You may lose the kinds of minor stresses that help propel you to use your brain, use your wits, solve problems. You lose your sense of value and usefulness as part of an organization. And people combat that in different ways. Some people use travel as an opportunity for education and for meeting new people. Other people just go travel and are isolated and take pictures, and it's neither a social nor an intellectual experience, or a physical one. Physical activity is very important. But if you're traveling, you're not meeting anybody, you're trying not to learn anything but just look at beautiful sights, and you isolate yourself, and you're not even walking, you've got a driver taking you around, maybe that's a good vacation for a week or two, but that's not a retirement plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Daniel, before we let you go, I have to ask you about the myth of the failing memory. I love this. And you make the argument that I oftentimes do is like, I can't seem to remember names as well anymore, but I think it's because I know so many people. It's hard to add more to the database of your brain. And you make the same argument. Can you tell us about that before we let you go?
Yeah, so memory, we think of old age in general as a time of declining memory, but the research doesn't support that. Older adults do have memory lapses. We have trouble finding a word, but it's really not as bad as you think. In general, older adults' memory is good. What happens is, as you say, we know so much more that it's like a hard drive that's full. It's there.
Yeah.
It just can be trickier or more time-consuming locating it and getting it out.
Right. So many great things within this book, and I just want to wrap it up by talking about the acronym that defines this principle for a long and healthy life. It's called COACH. What's that stand for?
Well, it's five things that just serve as a memory aid for the main points of the book, and of course to kind of collapse a lot of thought and 4,000 research papers into five letters is folly. But it'll give you a flavor of it. One is curiosity. Curious people, or people who are not curious but develop a curious attitude, tend to be happier. And that curiosity goes with O, which is openness. Openness to the world, to other people, to new experience. Really, curiosity and openness are so close, maybe you only need one of them. But they're so important, I'm repeating it, the idea. Push back against the tendency to not do new things as you age. That be open to them. New ideas, new activities. A is associations. Keep your network of people, your social network, large, and mix with people of different ages to the extent that you can. The next C is conscientiousness. Conscientiously follow these ideas. If you need to become more conscientious in order to be planful, to set money aside, to see the doctor and do what the doctor says, those are things you should change about yourself if you're not already conscientious, or get with somebody who is, who can help you out in these situations. Conscientiousness is the single biggest predictor of successful aging, because conscientious people do what they're told to do and see the doctor, and they do what the doctor says, and so on. And the last one is healthy practices, the H in COACH. And it's a cluster of things about sleep hygiene, a moderated diet, and movement, you know, getting out and moving. You don't necessarily have to exercise. The conversation isn't about whether you need to put in an extra 20 minutes on the treadmill. Biggest difference in longevity is the difference between people who just get up off the couch and take a walk around the block versus those who don't.
Yes. Daniel Levitin, thanks so much for joining us again on The Mountain Life. The book is Successful Aging, A Neuroscientist Explores the Power and Potential of Our Lives. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.